This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of November 27th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 266. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature. Canada is back at the FIFA World Cup after more than 36 years. But history repeated earlier in 2022 when the Canadian Soccer Association and the men's national team players could not agree on a formula to split the FIFA prize money. My guest is North Vancouver lawyer Ron Perrick, who got a fair deal for players before the Mexico 1986 World Cup. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or was Douglas Copeland right when he said that every single moment is a coincidence? November 25th was another moment. It was the 25th anniversary of the RCMP crackdown on peaceful protesters at the University of British Columbia during the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Leaders Summit. The protesters were there to express their disgust over the human rights abuses in Indonesia and China. It was also the last day of the public inquiry into the use of the Emergencies Act last February to end the anti-vaccine trucker convoy blockades. In 2001, retired Judge Ted Hughes found the Prime Minister's office meddled in the RCMP operation at APEC and breached citizens' civil liberties. Prime Minister John Chrétien did not testify, but at the November 25, 1997 news conference, he joked about the police using pepper spray.
What do you see?
Some of the protesters were maced. Does mace equal freedom? Would you have been maced yourself back then, Prime Minister Chrétien?
But I don't know what you mean by that.
A mace? Pepper spray? Some other members of the
media? Oh, but I don't know. This technique did not exist in those days. For me, pepper, I put it on my plate. Next.
In 2022, on November 25th, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau did testify about why he imposed a soft form of martial law across Canada, half a century after his father invoked the War Measures Act. Trudeau was asked by the lawyer for the truckers.
A number of people have testified in this inquiry referencing your widely published comments and calling the unvaccinated racists and misogynists. And we have heard testimony in this inquiry about how some of your officials wanted to label protesters as terrorists. Would you agree with me that one of the most important roles of a prime minister is to unite Canadians and not divide them by engaging in name calling?
I did not call people who were unvaccinated names. I highlighted there is a difference between people who are hesitant to get vaccinated for any range of reasons and people who deliberately spread misinformation that puts at risk the life and health of their fellow Canadians. My focus every step of the way, and the primary responsibility of a prime minister, is to keep Canadians safe and alive.
Right. My last question, Mr. Prime Minister, when did you and your government start to become so afraid of your own citizens?
That's a very
unfair... I am not, and we are not.
Those are my questions.
Commissioner Paul Rouleau's final report is due by February 20th. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Canada didn't play like a 41st-ranked team when it held number 2-ranked Belgium to a slim 1-0 win on November 23rd at Qatar 2022. Canada returned to the FIFA World Cup after more than 36 years' absence. After the team qualified in March, the players went on strike briefly over the Canadian Soccer Association's reluctance to share the $10 million minimum prize pool. President Nick Bontis said November 9th that a deal with men's and women's teams is nearing. Let's hope he's telling the truth. In 1986, North Vancouver lawyer Ron Pirek negotiated a deal for players that were bound for the World Cup in Mexico. They got training camp per diems, $1,500 per game per player, and a percentage of the Canadian Soccer Association's payments from FIFA. Pirek had to keep going back to the CSA to negotiate team contracts before World Cups and major tournaments, like the CONCACAF Gold Cup that Canada won in 2000. He's my guest on the Big Deal feature.
In 1986, the CSA wasn't doing anything business-wise. So what I did is I went to Molson's. It was Roy Adams, who was stationed out here in Vancouver, and I got to know him because of the sports stuff. And Molson's were a big supporter then. And my recollection is that that Molson's put up $500,000 for the players. And we were to get that for the players. And then the CSA, it was Kevin Pipe, and who was the president then. They took issue with that, of course, and they hadn't done anything. And they took issue with us using the team logo, which would be fair. And the long and short of it is we locked horns, and what we decided, I came to a deal, and what we did is we shared it. And then each player was allowed to go out and get his own sponsorships, and he could retain the money for that, as I recall. And then if there was, as a collective group, we would split the money up with that. And the CSA would, and we would share with the CSA, and they would share with us. So I set the deal. It was a good deal too. And everybody was happy with it. And the players, even like George Pecos, who played, I don't know if he played one qualifying game. I think he played one when somebody couldn't make it from, actually a lot of the players were playing in indoor soccer at the time. I think he got $13,000 back there for one game. The way it worked. So it worked out well for everybody. As far as 2022, I hadn't been following it too much, but I was quite horrified when I heard the word strike. That wasn't a word that had to come out, and I was sorry that it did. It was not not well thought out, whoever brought it out, because I know as a fan, I was struck back. I mean, it reflected badly on the players. It may have reflected badly on the CSA, but probably more so on the players, who at that point were very endeared to the whole country.
There was the 1994 World Cup in the U.S. that Canada was hoping to qualify for, and the CSA, they sold the rights to a qualifying match in Toronto against Mexico to the owner of the Toronto Blizzard for $100,000. It basically let the Toronto Blizzard owner keep the profits from the gate receipts. Do you remember much about that controversy and you know, how you got involved there to solve that problem?
I remember very well. I basically ignored what they did and took the position that they still had to deal with us, because the agreement we had just went through the World Cup, and we started all over again with respect to the 94. So they did what they did, but I wasn't going to try to undo it. They could sleep with it. And what I did is I got the players together. And quite frankly, it was like, you know, here's a line. Who's going to cross? I had three spots. One was an aggressive one. One was a fair medium one. And the other one was a fairly passive one. And of course, we were all in the same room. And there was a couple of aggressive guys. And the younger guys were scared. So they went to the, you know, plan C, but most of the guys were in plan B, and we decided that was our position. The CSA did not agree with it. We didn't say strike. We just weren't going to play. And within within a matter of hours, when the word was out that there might not be a game, the situation was resolved. So It was fair, but it was done. And then there was, again, controversy when the Gold Cup. Same thing. We had to cut a new deal. We didn't have the same deal running. I mean, at one time, we were really highly ranked in the world with respect to what the players' remuneration was. And that was pointed out to me several times by Kevin Pipe, that we were in the top 10, and I think they were ranked below 30. They're ranked pretty good at one time.
And it was a different time, different place, when ticket revenue meant so much more. Television wasn't quite mature enough. And of course, it was before the internet changed everything, and before smartphones changed everything, and before a lot of the big equipment and apparel manufacturers really jumped on board and turned the sport into what we see today. I guess today we've got more zeros at the end of all the sums.
That's true. What did happen with, even though we didn't have all the TV and whatever, the fact that the team was doing well really attracted a lot of attention from European clubs. And for example, Randy Samuel became very wealthy. I went over to Europe and negotiated with PSV Eindhoven, Watford, Sporting Lisbon at one time. And he became very, very successful over in Europe. And it was because of that exhibition game you talked about in Burnaby. That was the start of it. When he shut down, I think you mentioned Lineker and Hatley, were their two top strikers. And immediately he got attention, a lot of attention. So, and then Carl Valentine, I think Tino Letteri, just looking at some of the other guys, a few others, I can't remember exactly, but Bobby, well, they were playing locally too, and they were playing, the guys were making just as much money in indoor soccer as they were on outdoor. Mm-hmm. So they were making careers, but in particular, Randy Samuel and Craig Forrest were the ones. Craig later, he wasn't on the 86 team. That was Paul Dolan.
Mm-hmm.
Was on the 86 team. And Craig came in, I think, on the next qualifying. So,
what is your prediction for the future of the game, the business of soccer here in Canada, and cultivating those players who can command those salaries and force the Canadian Soccer Association to bargain fairly with them?
Well, I think that you said it well there when you said for a while it went into the wilderness, and then the women brought attention back to it. In fact, they asked me to represent them. Is it Sylvani? What's her name?
Sylvani.
Yeah, I had meetings with her, and I just felt it would be a conflict of interest for me to represent, you know, them, because they weren't being treated fairly either, and I felt bad for them, quite frankly. But when they started their success story, actually the men probably got some attention that they wouldn't otherwise have got. And that got that program going. It went very well. And then, of course, the groundswell from kids turning from hockey to soccer, and then some of the Canadian players doing well in Europe. All of a sudden, we had athletes here that can compete, just like the basketball players in Canada can now be competitive in the U.S. So now that they can make a living playing soccer, when Randy Samuel, when I took him over to Europe, in 86 after the World Cup, he was making, I think, $500 on a C card from Canadian Soccer. That was his salary, $500 a month.
Mm.
When the players started to earn some money here locally, and now the money is pretty good, it gives them more leverage and confidence. And of course, proportionately, they got to get paid well. You can play for your country, but, you know, everybody should get rewarded. And if you got smart people or good people in the marketing positions, the sky's really the limit, and it should be. But that's something I think probably because of the controversy in 2022, I'd say the controversy was a result of the CSA not getting their ducks in a row and getting some aggressive marketing out there for the players. I mean, the only player that we were hearing about was Davies. We didn't hear a lot about all the other players. There was no profile, and or at least that's my opinion. But they could have done, I think, a lot more to raise money, and then that money goes to the to the pot and can be used for the players, and then commensurate with what other teams are paying their players in the tournament. So
the World Cup is coming here in 2026.
Yeah, you've got to deal with the players. That's a starting point. You know, players will be fair. Players are fair if you explain to them the rules. Okay, but if they don't know what's going on, then you get everybody in between. You know, now every player would have a different agent. At the time, I think I was the only agent. None of the other players had agents. I was dealing with quite a few of them as in their personal capacity and for the team as well. I didn't regard that as a conflict. But now you've got a lot of people. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but then everybody's got different opinions as to what their players should get. And I think they have to get together collectively. And I think they will, because I think this is setting the table. This tournament here will set the table for the next one. And a lot of these players will be around. And then that'll give the incentive for a lot of other young players to want to get on that team. And it should snowball in the right direction. I think as Canadians, we should be very proud of the women's and the men's team. I'm really happy for young people that they can afford to play a sport without having to spend a lot of money to participate. You know, you need a ball and a field, and, you know, there's a lot of ball and fields around, and there's a lot of role models for them to follow. I think it really bodes well for Canadian soccer.
Ron Parrott, North Vancouver lawyer who has represented many as player in the past, including the members of the 1986 Team Canada that went to the Mexico World Cup, the first time Canada went to a World Cup. Canada's back at the World Cup, Qatar 2022, looking back at how Canadian soccer has evolved both on field and off field over the last several decades. So thank you again for joining me on the podcast, Ron Parrott.
Thank you.
Breaker.news podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In the Taiwan news, UK Foreign Affairs Committee delegation to visit Taiwan next week. The group was originally scheduled to visit Taiwan in February, but the trip was postponed due to the pandemic. Newly elected Foreign Affairs Committee Chair Alicia Kearns confirmed in October she will lead a delegation to Taiwan. The MP said that she has been pushing for a visit since 2020, but added that she does not want to antagonize China. In Kyoto news, ad giant Dentsu raided over alleged Tokyo Olympic bid rigging. The searches, joined by Japan's Fair Trade Watchdog, followed a widening sponsorship bribery scandal over the Tokyo Olympics, also involving a former executive of the now-defunct committee, that resulted in the raid of Dentsu's headquarters in July. Rigging is suspected in the 26 open bids held in 2018 for the rights to plan 56 test events. These were awarded to 9 companies, including Dentsu, as well as a consortium. The contracts totaled more than $3.6 million. In Hong Kong Free Press, court convicts Cardinal Zen and 5 others over failing to register Protester Relief Fund as society. After considering the roles of all 6 defendants, the size of the organization, and the time it operated without registration, they were fined between $2,500 Hong Kong dollars and $4,000 Hong Kong dollars each. Founded in June 2019 at the start of the mass extradition bill protests, 612 Humanitarian Relief Fund provided financial support for those arrested or injured before shutting down last August, after it learned the company holding its assets, the Alliance for True Democracy Limited, would soon do likewise. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.news podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.news podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In Oregon Public Broadcasting, in eastern Oregon, a labor shortage is making it harder to remove snow and ice from state highways. The Oregon Department of Transportation has almost 40 vacancies for seasonal and permanent positions on its road maintenance team. Most of these open positions are for snowplow drivers in charge of clearing roads and highways. New licensing requirements made by the federal government resulted in longer wait times to obtain a commercial driver's license. ODOT pays for new snowplow drivers to complete their training to get a CDL, but many choose to leave the agency for new jobs after the 6-month snowplow season is over. in King 5 Seattle. Common chemical in tires caused mass coho salmon deaths in Puget Sound, scientists say. A toxin called 6-PPD quinone was discovered to cause the deaths of local coho salmon before they spawned, causing a ripple effect in the environment. The U.S. Tire Manufacturer Association says the chemical adds to driver safety. Even if the use of 6-PPD was stopped, it could be decades before it's completely eradicated. Data from Washington State University shows that when stormwater pollution goes through green infrastructure, like a rain garden, it filters the chemical out. In the Times Colonist, Victoria businesses consider moving amid spiraling random violence. Many store owners and staffs are used to almost daily incidents. Some have pepper spray for protection. Vehicles have been damaged, staff have been put in danger, and items have been stolen, including a cell phone off the front counter. Grant McKenzie of Our Place Society estimates there are about 500 people living on the street in the downtown core in tents, makeshift shelters, or doorways. Many suffer from mental illness and severe drug addiction. That's Cascadia calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to local businesses across BC. The cafe, the bakery, the butcher, the dry cleaner. It's BC Buy Local Week, November 28th to December 4th. Keep your money in your community. Buy from a locally owned business. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of November 27th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 27th of November in 1994, the BC Lions won the Grey Cup at BC Place against Baltimore? And in 2011, the BC Lions won the Grey Cup at BC Place against Winnipeg? Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. That's patreon.com/TheBreakerNews.
Until next week.